So thank you for the invitation, the opportunity to speak about that topic. In the context of the project Demand.at, we have done research on a number of issues in the field. What could be demand-side measures and how do they work? And in another part of the project, I've worked on the evaluation and impact of campaigns, but that's not what I'm speaking about today. Today, I go back to the more theoretical and more conceptual issues which have been addressed and analyzed at the beginning of the project. So maybe the presentation will be kind of a challenge today to think about the meaning of demand in anti-trafficking debate in the field of sexual services. And the question is whether it's an ambiguous concept. If it is an ambiguous concept, can we have targeted measures? So my first part will go clockwise, sort of explore meanings of demand, starting with lexical meanings, going to meanings in political debate, going over to legal definitions and social scientific definitions. We have to be aware, and it's useful to be aware that there are these different meanings. Put the wrong button. So in lexical meanings, there are multiple meanings. Usually we have an ambiguous usage of words and colloquial language and use words in different senses. In political debates, words are embedded in frames. So for some people, when demand is said, immediately they think of penalizing purchasers of sexual services. For other people, it's not linked in this political frame, for example. But it's in political debates, it's always in stories that relate to problems and solutions, and words make it pop up what is maybe not said. Legal definitions ideally have clear criteria because in the end, judges have to make binary decisions. Somebody is guilty or not guilty. So they really need definitions. And also in social scientific terms, you need clear criteria for theoretical analysis and for empirical studies to really make sure what you observe. You can't switch between the meanings all the time to make a good empirical study. Having said that, I go into a bit more detail, taking stock of implications of these meanings. And afterwards, I will pick out one particular definition and explore with you what a consistent use of demand as willingness and ability to purchase a good or service could lead us to. So, start with lexical ambiguity. So we are people from different countries in the room now, and I would invite you to do that little test in your own language, or in a language that you're familiar with. In the screen, you find a screenshot from a dictionary, German-English dictionary, and you see, you don't have to understand, but you see on the right side that there are many, many meanings of demand. Among them, demand can be a need, a claim, a legal claim, a question, and in that sense of willingness and ability to purchase something, which is an economic sense. So whenever we talk, these different meanings may pop up in the course of associations, and they may be different depending on what language context we come from. Let's go to the second part, to this political origin of demand arguments in the anti-trafficking context. My colleague Norbert Cyrus has done a study on the historical origins of this debate, and it's published as a working paper on the Demand.at website, and this is sort of the effort to make it 100 pages in a nutshell. So the debates are grounded in the field of prostitution. At the beginning, there were historical abolitionists, or one could call them historical abolitionists, and they aimed at abolition of state regulation of prostitution. They criticized double moral standards. Male clients of prostitution were tolerated, but prostitutes were sanctioned. They criticized that. They saw prostitution as a private vice, and the state should not interfere. It should be to the private persons, and the state should not license brothels. The language and some of the ideas were taken up again at the end of the 20th century. And there has been an end-demand initiative, which is sometimes called also neo-abolitionist initiative. And in this view, prostitution or selling sexual services is violence against women, and ending demand campaigns have a focus on clients. Purchasing sexual services should be criminalized, and men should be re-educated that they don't really develop this idea that it is okay to purchase sexual services. So this is a very particular focus, how demand came into debate on anti-trafficking issues. Anti-trafficking issues as such have different roots in labor, in migration, and in prostitution. And it's no surprise that people who originated in migration have a few different ideas about this topic. If we now look at demand as a legal concept, which Richard has done already so far, I would start with saying there is no definition in national laws. There is no interpretation by jurisdiction. The concept of demand does not exist in national anti-trafficking laws. So it's difficult for law enforcement actors to deal with that. It's more an obligation, a moral obligation for governments. It is in international law, as you have pointed out, in the Palermo Protocol. And it came into the protocol in the very last session when it was prepared, and it then a formulation was done, and demand wasn't defined in the protocol as well. I will not read that out to you again, because that is what has been put up before. That is sort of the key legal text on demand, and there's not much more on that. What I want to highlight now is that there is a linkage done. It says demand should be discouraged, that fosters exploitation, that leads to trafficking. Explicitly, three fields are mentioned, and it can be thought of as demand refers to the field of consumption, that leads to exploitation in the field of production, and if somebody can exploit somebody in the field of production of whatever, recruitment into this field is encouraged. If we now look at social scientific context, which should be ideally clear, I did a study looking at what is actually done in social scientific studies, and I found that markets were the most evoked context. Demand was often defined in the sense of willingness or ability to purchase a good or service, or a person, a captive person, and the correlate is supply. So whenever demand is mentioned in the context of supply, we think of markets and prices and something like that. But then in the end, very different uses of demand were done in many studies. For example, employer demand was not used in the sense of willingness to buy work from somebody, but in the sense of an authoritative claim to someone's work who is not freely able to reject from it. Or demand was used in the sense of preferences or tastes of consumers. Or demand was used in the sense of social norms like social demand for masculinity or something like that. Demand was used as want, wish, or need to buy a specific good, as a feel or a need for a service. And sometimes demand was just used as a filler word, I would say, when you can just leave out the word, particularly in the phrase reducing demand for trafficking. Very often you can just leave out demand for, and what the person is really thinking of is reducing trafficking. So sometimes it, because everybody talks about it, it became sort of a filler word that comes in, but what we are really talking is about reducing exploitation, reducing trafficking. And also, I think in this conference, we should be free to do that. Even if demand is in the title, it is one aspect we have to consider, but the real thing is about reducing exploitation and trafficking. So that was sort of the first part. I think it's important to be aware of that, that we may have misunderstandings because we switch between meanings of the words, because of the associations in a native language, somebody may use the word differently from another person, and that also there may be misunderstandings because some people are very strongly rooted in the political frame of discussing demand as demand for prostitution or for sexual services as such. And we should try to find out what is real inconsistencies, when we are really talking about differences on our views on the real world, or whether we maybe misunderstand each other just because of the terms. Let's take the time to find that out, if possible. So in the second part, I would like to consider some implications of a consistent use of demand as willingness and ability to purchase a good or service with you. Just explore that view if you use it consistently like that, and what you can do with that in the field of sexual exploitation. I start with a very general, general notions and implications. So if I speak of a market, I have to clarify who wants to buy what from whom. I have to name the actors and the good that is traded. And we have to sort of make sure that we speak about the same thing. Also, speaking about market, it's always speaking about many interlinked markets. So one and the same person can be on the demand side in one market and the supply side in another market. So it's misleading if people who are trafficked are always addressed as supply side, or some other people only the supply side, because it's sort of in this concept of markets that you are on different sides in different markets. Third issue, it's really about being able to buy something and wanting to buy something. It's something like taste or income can influence demand, but it is not demand in that concept, because it's a difference whether I want something or whether I really want to buy something. That's a difference. And some further implication, which is a bit tricky, but I just want to turn your attention to it. So this terminology is very easy to apply on markets, or where kind of spot markets, or interactions which are short-term, maybe repeated, like for a meal, a restaurant meal, for a ticket to somewhere, or for a sexual service. The markets also establish long-term contractual relations, like in labor markets, in credit markets, and in housing markets. And also among economists, it's sort of disputed how well these simple supply and demand models work in these long-term contexts, in these relations. These relations are shaped by loyalty. People can sort of, they have voice, they can say, well, it's not okay if it is done like that in the relation, we have agreed otherwise. And it's the question, what exit opportunities do they have? That is a very crucial, and referring to Hirschman, who has thought about that theoretically, leads us to the idea that relations are different from short-term market interactions. Just to keep that in mind, so when we speak of labor demand, for example, many people, I think, mean the actual process of recruiting someone, but many people here are probably in a labor relation, maybe in a long-term labor relation, and what happens inside that relation is often not governed by market forces, but by different forces. That was the first part of implications. Now I will turn to the field of markets in relation to trafficking and sexual services and start off with a simple model. So I've sort of made a symbolic picture of demand and supply in a setting where human beings are the traded good. The good is sort of symbolized by the box. Demand is symbolized by a red arrow and supplies by the gray arrow. In the center, you have the exploiter. An exploiter may see an opportunity to sell or hire a person under his or her control, usually thought of under his control, to another person, a client, and make money with that. Because that is the case, the exploiter exercises demand towards somebody who can bring a person towards him. And the whole market is thought of like in drug trafficking, where the drug would be in the box, as the person is treated as a commodity. It's completely under control of the person who sort of gets control of it, maybe in a country of origin, maybe in an area within a country where the person is vulnerable, and the person is sold to an exploiter, and the exploiter sells the person or the services of the person to a consumer, a client. That is sort of the simple model like that. It's also possible to think of this market, in a different, more complex setting. Again, you have the same symbols, and at the center now is the sex worker who could sell sexual services to a client. The sex worker is supplying, the client is demanding services. At the same time, the sex worker could need rooms for that, or could find it a bit dangerous to be alone with clients and need maybe some security services or other services facilities, and could demand these services from a sex business provider, for example, a brothel owner. If this person is not in a place where she can offer these services, she might also, before in a different country, demand services of someone to bring her to the different place. For example, by asking for a transfer, maybe a smuggling transfer, by asking for a loan because the travel cannot be covered from own means, for asking for a matching service, for providing an opportunity to work somewhere, and a recruiter or broker in the country of origin would supply that services. So in that, the sex worker is on the demand side in some markets, on the supply side in others. At the same time, the sex business provider who has a business in Brussels could ask for a matching service from a recruiter, like a, we want to recruit more persons to work in our establishment. And now in this setting, things can happen. For example, you can have exploitation in the way that persons are dealt with by brothel owners. They can have prices, have prices to pay that are usury. They can be exposed to conditions that have not been freely agreed. And in the matching coming to the country, there can be trafficking in human beings, or from one place to another, there can be trafficking in human beings, because it's not happening what has been agreed with the person. So maybe somebody didn't really just ask for a travel service, maybe an illegal travel service, and found herself caught up in a relation where she has to repay a debt as a sex worker. So it's a question how exploitation, how trafficking can be interpreted in that sense. Okay, what's, does it go backwards? So now we could say a lot of measures which are taking place in the relation between, in relation to providers and to recruiters are within the criminal justice focus, and they seek to sanction people who exert force or other illicit means or threats or so on. We could call the relation with the client the demand side focus, if we just put it on the consumer side and see what can be done on this side, which is would be a conventional view on that, but sometimes it's also applied to labor relations. And lastly, there could be a focus on the sex worker in the center with an empowerment focus. And the general idea that this person is on the weaker market side, whether she exercises supply or demand, other people are have monopolies or have a stronger position and may be able to exploit the person there. So everything that focuses on strengthening this weaker market side would be the empowerment focus. So I have summarized these three approaches to combat trafficking in a market perspective like that. If we say the criminal justice focus is focusing on the exploiter and trafficking, it can mean, on the one hand, to prove a market relation as fake, as coercive. It's not really a market relation. And then sanction THB and rescue the victims. Or it can focus on proving abuse in market relations, saying, okay, it is a market relation, but also the person accepts it's a market relation, but it's not fair, and the weaker market side should be protected. With the demand side focus on clients, it can be criminalizing the purchases of sexual services in general or specific sexual services and discourage spending for something like that. But on the other side, it can also be engaging with clients to identify unlawful demand within such relations. for example, for sex with minors. Empowerment focus with a focus on the sex worker can mean support of the weaker market side, whether demand or supply, and help to change or exit abusive relations, whether they are market relations or non-market relations. Well, I would like to stop now. I'm well in time as well with these remarks. They are meant as food for thought. On the one hand, in the first part, to be aware that we may not be speaking about the same thing when we talk about demand and that we have to be clear about what we say. Maybe to avoid using demand as a filler word when we don't really need it. On the second part, I have explored some ideas what we can do with the concept of demand when we consider it as a market relation. And that is just sort of one offer, one exploration, what can be done with the concept, and you can see whether it makes sense for you and where you would see it differently or where it doesn't make sense for you. Maybe we don't need the concept as often as we think. Thank you.